Matthew chapter 23, verses 1 to 12. Then Jesus said to the crowds and to his disciples, "The teachers of the law and the Pharisees sit in Moses' seat, so you must obey them and do everything they tell you. But do not do what they do, for they do not practice what they preach. They tie up heavy loads and put them on men's shoulders, but they themselves are not willing to lift a finger to move them. Everything they do is done for men to see. They make their phylacteries wide and the tassels on their garments long. They love the place of honor at banquets and the most important seats in the synagogues. They love to be greeted in the marketplace and to have men call them rabbi. But you are not to be called rabbi, for you have only one master and you are all brothers. And do not call anyone on earth father, for you have one father and he is in heaven. Nor are you to be called teacher, for you have one teacher, the Christ. The greatest among you will be your servant. For whoever exalts himself will be humbled, and whoever humbles himself will be exalted."
Some time ago, I read a story about a golfer named Jones who turned up 20 minutes late at the first tee one Sunday morning. The other three members of the regular foursome were almost ready to drive off without him. "I agreed with my wife," explained Jones, "that this Sunday I'd toss a coin to see whether I play golf or go to church. Heads, I'd play golf. Tails, I go to church. You wouldn't believe it. I had to toss that coin 43 times before it came up heads." Now, there was someone determined to put his sport above everything else. He was making a statement about priorities. In the pressures of today's world, there are too many who don't allocate regular time to relax. In the Sabbath rule, we need to recognize that the loving Creator has given us permission to take a break. Permission that we ignore to our detriment in the pressures of today's world. We can actually feel guilty about doing nothing in particular. The Sabbath rule tells us, of course, to take a break to the Lord our God. We need to recharge the batteries spiritually, not only physically and emotionally. So much of our lives center just on ourselves. Some of us may have a major problem with low feelings of self-esteem, another symptom of our self-centeredness. An admirer once asked the famous conductor Leonard Bernstein, "What was the most difficult instrument to play?" He was quick to respond, "Second fiddle." "I can get plenty of first violinists, but to find one who plays second violin with as much enthusiasm, or second French horn, or second flute, now that's a problem. And yet, if no one plays second, we have no harmony." Jesus was opposed by the Pharisees, the Sadducees, and the teachers of the law. They were looking for every opportunity to catch him out, hoping to expose him to public ridicule or to the condemnation of the Roman authorities. Jesus had answered them carefully and wisely. While angered by his responses, they could find no fault in him and dared not ask him any more questions. Jesus now warns the crowds and his disciples against the teachers of the law and the Pharisees. He says that the teachers of the law and the Pharisees sit in Moses' seat. In other words, they claim to be the ones who are the heirs of Moses' authority by an unbroken tradition. Thinking this about themselves, they really believe that they can and must assess and make pronouncements on the teachings of Jesus. Jesus doesn't condemn their teachings here as he does elsewhere. Rather, he acknowledges that there is a measure of respect due to them. So you must be careful to do everything they tell you, but do not do what they do, for they do not practice what they preach. Jesus describes them as taskmasters, not burden bearers, not sympathetic helpers. It seems that they take pride in loading people down with the many regulations that they have added to the law of Moses. In fact, their own observance of the law is wholly outward rather than inward. They make a great show of their own holiness, but in reality, they've missed the heart of the matter altogether. They are very particular about wearing phylacteries. These are small leather cases in which are four strips of parchment containing Exodus 13, verses 1 to 10 and verses 11 to 16, Deuteronomy 6, verses 4 to 9, and chapter 11, verses 13 to 21. Here is a description. The phylactery for the head consists of a box with four compartments, each containing a slip of parchment inscribed with one of the four passages. Each of these strips was to be tied up with a well-washed hair from a calf's tail, lest if tied with wool or thread, any fungoid growth should ever pollute them. They were most particular. The phylactery of the arm was to contain a single slip with the same four passages written in four columns of seven lines each. The black leather straps by which they were fastened were wound seven times round the arm and three times round the hand. They were reverenced by the rabbis as highly as the scriptures, and like them, it was permissible to rescue them from the flames on a Sabbath. Now, if you want to know more about phylacteries, if you actually look it up on your computer, you'll even see pictures of people. Someone told me this morning that I'd seen pictures of Israeli soldiers who had these boxes on their foreheads. But you'll see these black bands that hold them on their wrist. Now it is true that in Deuteronomy 6, we hear Moses saying, "Hear, O Israel, the Lord your God, the Lord is one. Love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your strength. These commandments that I give you today are to be upon your hearts. Impress them on your children. Talk about them when you sit at home and when you walk along the road, when you lie down and when you get up. Tie them as symbols on your hands and bind them on your foreheads. Write them on the door frames of your houses and on your gates. But they had failed to grasp that these were not principally to be symbols on forehead, arms, doorposts, and gates. God's law was to be the principle of their thinking, their actions, their family life, and all their comings and goings. Again and again, we hear the Old Testament prophets saying, in effect, "You've got it all wrong. You preserve the religious shell, but have no heart for me or for other people." We hear the Lord saying through the prophet Isaiah, "The multitude of your sacrifices, what are they to me? I have more than enough of burnt offerings of rams and the fat of fattened animals. I have no pleasure in the blood of bulls and lambs and goats. When you come to appear before me, who has asked this of you, this trampling of my courts? Stop bringing meaningless offerings. Your incense is detestable to me. New moons, Sabbaths, and convocations, I cannot bear your evil assemblies. Wash and make yourselves clean. Take your evil deeds out of my sight. Stop doing wrong. Learn to do right." Fairly pointed, wasn't it? Or we think of the words of another prophet, Micah. "With what shall I come before the Lord and bow down before the exalted God? Shall I come before him with burnt offerings, with calves a year old? Will the Lord be pleased with thousands of rams, with 10,000 rivers of oil? Shall I offer my firstborn for my transgression, the fruit of my body for the sin of my soul? He has showed you, O man, what is good. And what does the Lord require of you? To act justly, to love mercy, and to walk humbly with your God." Yes, they were wearing it on their foreheads. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your strength. But never, in fact, translating it into their lives. To walk humbly with our God. That's the very quality that was missing from their lives. "That's not to be the way you live," Jesus tells his disciples. "In fact, don't be called rabbi, because you're all brothers and have only one master. Don't elevate someone else's father, because you have only one father in heaven." Of course, he wasn't speaking here about our human dad. "Don't even claim the title teacher, because your one and only teacher is Christ himself. Walk humbly with your God. The greatest among you will be your servant. For whoever exalts himself will be humbled, and whoever humbles himself will be exalted." C.S. Lewis wrote, among many other things, "The second person in God, the Son, became human himself, was born into the world as an actual man, a real man of a particular height, with hair of a particular colour, speaking a particular language, weighing so many stone." Well, that's kilograms for us now, isn't it? "The eternal being who knows everything and who created the whole universe became not only a man, but before that a baby, and before that a fetus inside a woman's body." If you want to get the hang of it, think of how you would like to become a slug or a crab? A slug or a crab? That seems an extreme comparison to us. But the humbling of the Son of God in becoming a human being was extreme. The Son of God humbled himself. He doesn't ask of us more than he was willing to do himself. A young newly ordained minister came up to the lectern, very self-confident and immaculately dressed. He was about to deliver his first sermon in his first church, and the words simply wouldn't come out. Finally, he burst into tears and ended up leaving the platform, obviously humbled. There were two older ladies sitting in the front row, and one remarked to her neighbour, "If he'd come in like he went out, he would have gone out like he came in." Jesus calls us to a real trust in God and to humble service in his church, among his people, and in his world. The temptation is ever before us, as it was for those first disciples of Jesus, to exalt ourselves, to impress others, to make a name for ourselves. That was not how Jesus came, nor was it why he came. The prophet Micah put it this way: "He has showed you what is good, and what does the Lord require of you? To act justly and to love mercy and to walk humbly with your God." To act justly. Our country's leaders must enact and practice justice in the ordering of society. The rest of us need to do the right thing, including fairness in all our dealings with others. To love mercy. God is a forgiving God. His forgiveness involves both justice and mercy. Hence the cross. Think about that one. To walk humbly with our God. We are to live in fellowship with God in modesty and without arrogance. At the heart of everything is God's purpose that we live in close relationship with him. Jesus didn't see this happening in the Jewish leaders of his day. But his disciples too often were hoping and expecting that he would give them the best and most privileged place in his kingdom. His word to them and to us: "The greatest among you will be your servant. All who exalt themselves will be humbled, and all who humble themselves will be exalted." Amen.